Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Emily Reddy. The next United States Census is coming up next year, but questions remain about how it will be carried out after a push from the Trump administration to add a question about citizenship. We dive into the implications of that question today and look at the ways census data is used, including some you might not realize. Today's episode is from the Democracy Works podcast, a collaboration between WPSU and the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State. This episode was originally broadcast in May 2018. You'll hear first from the Institute's Michael Berkman and Chris Beam, then an interview with Penn State's Jennifer Van Hook, a demographer and census expert, conducted by Jenna Spinelli. Then back to Beam and Berkman to explain why the census is an essential part of democracy.
Hello, I'm Michael Berkman.
I'm Chris Beam.
And this is Democracy Works. Today, we are privileged to be joined by Jennifer Van Hook, a professor of sociology and demography at Penn State. And Chris, we're going to talk about the census today.
Right. We picked this subject because for a couple reasons. It is a bulwark of democracy, and it's something that we'll talk about now. But it's something that, for that reason alone, kind of merits our attention. But right now, it's also a very topical issue because, for two reasons. One, there is an argument out there that the census is underfunded and really not ready for the issues that are the procedures that are going to be coming up in 2020. And then the other thing is this new question that the Department of Commerce has decided needs to be added, which is about citizenship. And so these are both, very important news issues that relate directly to what the census is and what it does.
Right. It's also something that the Constitution requires the Congress to do. Mm-hmm. Right? There are not a whole lot of things that the Constitution says the Congress has to do.
Right.
You mentioned it's important to democracy. And one way that I see that is, of course, it is essential to representation in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Every 10 years, the Congress is required to reapportion. Now, we spent a lot of time talking about redistricting.
Right.
And we've had podcasts on redistricting.
Right.
And redistricting is what happens within a state as they redraw the district lines to make sure that every district within a state has an equal number of people. But prior to that, the Constitution requires that the number of seats in the Congress be apportioned around around the states,
right.
And now 50 states, of course, based on the census. And in fact, in 1920, they did a census, but they didn't reapportion. And so by the time they reapportioned in 1930, you have this dramatic gain. I've seen this referred to as the most liberal Congress ever that Franklin Roosevelt had in 1930, because you went from a population that was largely rurally based in 1910
mm-hmm.
to one that had shifted into the cities, had shifted, especially with the waves of immigration, into the urban areas, but it wasn't picked up because the Congress did not reapportion
right.
in 1920.
And so, but ever since then, it has been reapportioned, and every 10 years, we get a new snapshot of where people live in the United States of America.
Right. And so, which is also important for the, and I'm sure Jenny will talk about this a little bit, for the distribution of federal funds.
Right.
Which are often based on population
mm-hmm.
being a certain, but there's so much more to the census. And it can be treated as a very political thing. It wasn't intended to be political. It's supposed to be just a straight counting.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, these numbers are very important to people with different kinds of political goals.
Right. And if you are talking about where congressional seats go, that is, it may be an apolitical process, but the results are not. And so no one is indifferent to how this works and how it operates on the ground. And so, and I think you're actually seeing this reflected in the citizenship question as well. We have said enough, and so we should bring on the expert and see what she has to say.
Yep, good idea. So let's bring in Jenna, who's going to talk with Jenny Van Hook.
Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today on Democracy Works.
Oh, no problem.
So as you heard Chris and Michael talk about in the introduction, we want to cover several aspects of the census today, and thought maybe we would just start off with kind of a broader question and then dive in from there. So in your view, as someone who has studied the census and worked with the data, what do you see as the role that the census plays in a democracy?
Okay, so the census is, I would say, absolutely fundamental for any kind of representative democracy, where you have to kind of divide political power according to where the population lives. And so in the United States was actually the first nation in the world to require there be a regular census be conducted every 10 years. And they did this for a reason, is because they wanted to distribute power across the states according to the sizes of their populations and also according to just states. And so, you know, the Senate has two senators per state, but then the House of Representatives is, you know, the number of representatives that each state gets is, you know, proportional to the size of their population. And how do you know how big that population is? You can't just guess. You have to actually count it. And so they knew that. And so they, you know, required that there be a census every 10 years.
Great. Yeah. And I think that, you know, Chris and Michael talked about the, you know, kind of difference between redistricting and reapportionment. And that certainly is one key use of census data. But I think that there are many other uses, right, that folks might not be as aware of. What are some of those?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this, and, you know, it is about equal representation, but then there's also a lot of other uses of census data. And one of them that's really key to our democracy is this, you know, civil rights. And a lot of the civil rights legislation that occurred since, I think, the 1960 Civil Rights Act required that there be some data so that we could tell whether groups were underrepresented or if groups were disproportionately hired or fired or whatever, you know, it is. And so you needed to have information about the location where people work, how much they get paid, et cetera, according to race, ethnicity, gender, you name it. And so there's no way to know if a group is discriminated against unless you actually have data that tells you that.
Right. And so some of those issues are pretty politically charged, right? And it's kind of the census's job to look at them in a nonpartisan sort of way.
Exactly. So I have one person I know who works at the Census Bureau, and he calls it a monastery. And really, it's what they call it. It's like a monastery that sort of curates a number or a data, a statistic, a data point. And they never say anything about what it means. They just present that number and cultivate it, and then they give it to the public, and they never comment on what it means. And they do that for a reason, because they really want to stay out of the politics of what those numbers mean.
Right. And so it's interesting, too, to think about, you know, an era of fake news, and everybody can kind of pick and choose their own facts and their own set of data, you know, how the census will kind of grapple with that as we head into 2020, right?
I know. And it's really heartbreaking to think about how census data could be so politicized, in the sense, because I know the efforts that they go to sort of strip the data of any kind of political or partisan kind of lean. Mm-hmm. And Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit more about that? You know, what are some of those steps that census staff takes?
Well, okay. So any report that the census provides, for example, has about 70 different authors, you know. Oh. So there is no single authorship from the census. The people who work there, they work in large teams. Everything is treble, triple, quadruple checked. Every single number that you might see in a report, underlying that might be 60, 70 different statistical tests to make sure that that number is accurate. And then the reports themselves are devoid of any kind of interpretation. They're just describing the numbers and the accuracy of those numbers.
Oh, wow. And so I know there's also been a lot of talk lately about the Census Bureau being underfunded, understaffed. So from your experience on the Census Advisory Board, do you think that the Bureau can sustain that level of quality of, you know, effort put into its work, given some of those challenges?
Well, like, the Census Bureau right now doesn't have a director. And I think the director really sets the tone and leads the whole Bureau through the whole decennial census process. Not having somebody in charge and really setting the vision there could be a problem. Also, I realize, and I know that you know, one of the things that people have been worried about is the level of outreach and the amount of resources devoted to outreach to educate people about the census. So, you know, the census is one of those agencies. They collect data. They have to protect data. They're not allowed to share individual data with any other agency. So, for example, they don't have to, I mean, they have to promise never to share individual data with, say, ICE. And so immigrants may not know this. And so that's one of the reasons why they require all of this outreach to reassure people that their data is safe. And so if they can provide data to the Census Bureau, and the Census Bureau is not going to pass it along to anybody else.
Right, right. This is not Facebook. Your data is not going to Cambridge Analytica or, you know, other places like that.
Yeah, and then so when you don't have that opportunity to really build that trust, you know, I think what you're going to end up seeing is a lot of people not trusting in the census and not really wanting to participate.
Right, which is kind of detrimental to something that is in the Constitution, right, at the core of what we are as a country.
Exactly.
And so I think the other part of that outreach is, you know, actually going and finding to make, you know, literally make sure every person is counted. What does that process look like in that end of the outreach?
Okay. So what happens is everybody gets a postcard in the mail saying, oh, the census is coming up. And so you need to participate. This year actually is the first year that you're going to be able to participate online. But let's say you don't participate and you don't respond to that, then you might get a follow-up call, and then if you don't respond to that, there might be somebody coming to your door, knocking on your door, and asking you to, you know, so there's a lot of follow-up. The follow-up is the most expensive part of the whole process, and that's what's going to raise costs. So if people don't participate to begin with, that's when the costs increase a lot. So, you know, so cost is just one example of why we don't really want it. We want to increase participation.
And so the other thing that's kind of on the horizon for this year is bringing back a question about citizenship status, right?
Yeah.
And so what from your perspective, what goes into, you know, into deciding the wording of a question and, you know, all of those types of factors?
Yeah, everything is tested and field tested. So, you know, the introduction of a new question typically takes several years because of all the tests that are done in order to make sure that people are interpreting the question correctly, answering the question in a way that is intended. And whether or not the addition of the question would cause people to not participate in the census. And so, you know, with the citizenship question, really the big question is really how much is that going to then depress participation?
Right.
You know, it's sort of a hot button issue, especially right now, since I'd say anti-immigrant rhetoric has been increasing, and a lot of that has been coming from our administration now. And so I would say, you know, the kinds of field tests that have been done in the past concerning the citizenship question may have to be redone in this current era because we just don't know how people are going to be responding to that question.
Why is this citizenship question being added back in?
Well, Wilbur Ross is the Secretary of Commerce, and his argumentation is that they needed it to enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1964. And I guess they were arguing that they need to have the data down to the very, very detailed levels of geography in order to tell whether the voting that voting rights were being enforced.
Right.
And I guess the question there is like, you know, as soon as they collect that data, in 2 or 3 years, it's going to be out of date again. And so why not use the American Community Survey, which is going to provide annual data on this question, instead of thinking that the decennial census was what you needed for that?
Sure. And then I think, too, there are sometimes where the you kind of have to estimate or maybe use sampling or, you know, other methods if there are hard to reach populations. What are some of those circumstances?
Yeah, there's certain groups that are difficult to count, I would say. And so, you know, the kinds of people I would put in that category would include people who don't really want to interact with the federal government, like undocumented immigrants. Another group would be people who are not living in places that you would call a household or a place of residence that's commonly a place of residence. So the homeless would be an example of that, or somebody who is just drifting. You know, like they often they talk about the people who kind of are sleeping on somebody else's couch. And so where do they actually live?
Right. And so how does the census account for those groups?
Very difficult to get them. Yeah. And so those are the groups that have the highest rates of undercoverage. How do we know? I think that was one of the questions that you had. How do we know we're missing them? It's because people are born and they die. And so we have another set of records that record births and deaths. And so we can compile, kind of build up estimates of how large the population must be. Because we know we have a record of their birth. We don't have a record of their death, so that they've got to be here somewhere, right? And then we compare that to the census.
Oh, that's interesting, uh-huh. Kind of using those comparative points.
Uh-huh.
Right, and I know that Wilbur Ross has said that in his kind of rationale for adding this question, that he thinks that the, you know, benefits of having this information will outweigh the potential risks of lower response rates and things like that. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I think the part of the issue is that I don't think they have shown that it's really necessary. So typically, the stuff that's put on the census, especially the what's called the short form census, the one that you will get, everybody will get, every single one of those questions has to be dictated and necessary by law. So you can't just throw questions on because you think it won't harm it. Every single question has to be on there because it is absolutely required. And so, you know, does the addition of the citizenship question really meet that bar? I would disagree, because we do have another survey called the American Community Survey. It's administered to 3.5 million households every year, and they've been collecting citizenship questions, you know, for years and years and years. And those data have been used to evaluate and enforce the Voting Rights Act in the past. And I am not aware of any problems with that.
Right. And for people not familiar with that survey, can you talk a little bit about how it differs from the census in terms of what's asked and how it's conducted, things like
that? It's a lot longer. It's a longer survey. It has many questions. The questions change from year to year as needed. And it's administered to, like I said, a little over I think it's about 3.5 million people every year. What it does is it provides more detailed information on an annual basis for the U.S. population. And since it's such a large survey, we can even get down to county level information or even census tract information every 5 years using that. Whereas like the census is only to every 10 years and it has, what, 5 questions on it?
Sure.
Yeah.
So coming back to the question of how census data is used, I know you mentioned civil rights type of issues. Are there other ways that data is used?
Sure. Yeah. So it's used to distribute funds. So there's last I read, it was about $600 billion in federal and state funds are distributed according to the census. The other one is that it's used for, and I'm just talking about sort of census data in general, not just the decennial census, for business planning, for that matter. You know, a lot of businesses use census data, whether they know it or not, when they make decisions about where to locate their businesses and who they're trying to market to. So there's a lot of reasons for it.
So the census is also used to inform federal policy, right?
Yes.
Can you talk about how that mm-hmm. happens?
Whenever we need to know something about the population health, let's say, For example, recently there was a lot of news about how the life expectancy has dropped for certain groups, especially whites in their 40s and 50s in certain areas. And, you know, and I think this was attributed to a large degree to the opioid crisis and what they're calling deaths of despair. This information would not be known without having the census and other federal statistical agencies. And so there's two agencies that would have collected that data. It would be the National Center for Health Statistics, which collects the data on deaths and death rates. But then we also have the need for what's called denominators. And denominators provide the population at risk of dying. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that the census data kind of runs through all of the federal statistical systems that we have. And those data are used not just for people who study the census explicitly, but then also they're used everywhere else as well. So they're sort of the backbone of our whole federal statistical system.
Right, right. So even if it doesn't say this, you know, this data comes from the U.S. Census, chances are it might very well have.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be aware of some of these changes in population health or in poverty rates or in average earnings. None of that stuff would be really very well known, and we would just have sort of glimpses or vague notions of what was happening. We really wouldn't know without having these data.
Right. So if you were going to make kind of the case or the pitch to anybody who's listening out there in podcast land about why they should fill out their census, why they should, you know, pay attention to it, what would you say?
Oh, it's good to be counted because we don't know really much about our own population unless we measure it. Can I add one little story here? There's this interesting story that Margot Anderson writes about in her book on the American Census. And she's describing how a representative in Congress, and it was coming up to census time, and he was concerned about the cost of the census and wondering, you know, why do we even need a census in the first place? Because, he said, whenever I need some statistics about my state or my home district, I just look it up in the almanac. And, of course, where does the data in the almanac come from? Of course, it comes from the census. And so, you know, oftentimes we think census data or statistics about ourselves just kind of comes down from the sky or from the internet, you know. But, of course, obtaining that data, compiling that data, it all occurs in the Census Bureau.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great story, kind of always thinking about where, how those things connect and how it all kind of meets back on the other side. All right, well, Jenny Van Hook, thank you so much for joining us today on Democracy Works.
Thank you.
That was a very interesting interview. I learned quite a bit.
Yeah, she really knows her stuff, and she was very measured and fair in what she said, I thought.
Yeah, really, the couple things she said there really registered with me. One was this idea that, you know, people within the Census Bureau sort of think of themselves as a monastery, right? That in, you know, controlling this truth, these facts, and not allowing them to be, or not wanting them to become politicized, or for that matter, for the collection of the facts,
right,
to not become politicized. I think that's the key thing.
She said they go out of their way to stay out of politics.
Yes.
Their job is not to do anything but follow the mandate that's in the Constitution, count everybody.
Yeah. So I saw problems with this from two directions in the modern political time. One is the Constitution doesn't create a Census Bureau and empower it to go out and collect information. Rather, it tells Congress that it needs to go out and collect the information. And Congress creates the Census Bureau within the Commerce Department. And Congress writes the laws that mandate how they're going to go about collecting the information. They have to approve some of this, which has to go on. So you have this enterprise, which is essentially supposed to be nonpartisan, nonpolitical, just the facts, please, in the hands of the most partisan body around. And I mean, I think it's important to think about how this works. Obviously, what comes out of the Census Bureau will be politicized because it has to be. Those facts are used for making public policy decisions.
Right.
They're used for allocating funds. They're used for determining the balance of power within Congress. Of course, they're politicized. But what we are increasingly losing And I think it's something we've referred to before, and I think we have to keep coming back to, you know, whether we're talking in the area of the environment or many other areas of public policy, just a sense that science is not respected, that experts are not.
Right.
Not, I mean, take somebody like Jenny. She's a demographer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people in the Census Bureau, this is what they do, and this is what they know.
Right.
They're experts and professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. We're in a moment now. We have, you know, we had an election, and we elected a leader, and we elected a party that is enacting a range of policies that are intimidating to non-citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we elected.
Right.
But people within the Census Bureau, that's not what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they recognize that asking a question like this in a highly in an era when immigrants have been vilified,
right,
that being asked a question about citizenship at this time in this environment is very threatening.
Right. The other part is that the resources that the census has to make people aware that A, this is coming, and B, this data is sacred. Nobody can use it. We're not going to tell ICE that you've done this. And so all the resources that Census needs to reinforce the idea that they should trust the Census is taken away.
Right.
So
exactly.
It's when you combine those. When you combine those two facts, the idea that this is not going to end up pushing people away from answering the census truthfully is just, I think, hard to sustain.
Right. And from the perspective of people within the Census Bureau who have the non-political job of counting how many people we have, if you then put a question on that makes it more difficult for them to count the number of people that we have, then that's a bad idea.
That's a bad
from
period
their perspective.
Paragraph.
And I think we need to recognize this is kind of a central question that this whole thing gets at. You know, it's about the census. The census is important. I think Jenny gave us just the tip of the iceberg about why the census is important. But it feels to me like just another area where we're no longer going to trust the scientists. And by scientists here, I mean, you know, I'm not talking about the environmental scientists in the EPA. I'm talking about the data scientists in the Census Bureau, professionals.
Right.
People have been trained to do a job that throughout our government, there just seems to be a moving away from the idea that there is expertise, that there is that not everything is a matter of your partisanship and political leanings. People can just do their jobs.
Well, I actually have the same feeling. And what I thought about was, you know, bureaucrat is not necessarily a dirty word, right? There are people in Washington who are extremely committed to doing their job as well and as professionally as they can. And it's very easy for politicians to just denigrate this entire class of people. And you know, what we're hearing from this idea of monastery, from this idea that the census is a backbone, is that people who work in the Census Bureau take their responsibilities extremely seriously, and it's their life's work. And they have done things in terms of how they organize their actions and their procedures to ensure that this is done well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if there's one takeaway, that might be it, that, you know, hug your federal bureaucrat.
Hug your bureaucrat. We're going to leave it at that. We're going to leave it at hug your bureaucrat.
Why not? All right.
This is Democracy Works.
Thank you.
Today's interview was from the Democracy Works podcast, a collaboration between WPSU and the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State. You can hear more Take Note interviews and more episodes of Democracy Works at WPSU.org. I'm Emily Reddy, WPSU.